This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Dublin Arsenal Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Dulles. On this special podcast, Monday, October 13th, I'm joined by special guests and hosts of the world-famous Schooner Podcast, Arsecast, Andrew Mangan, to review our season to date and chat about Mikel Arteta's six-year reign at the helm of the Gunners. Andrew also chats about his favourite memories from his years of supporting the Gunners. Remember to check out every match day in the Dublin Arsenal Supporters Club Bar, the River Bar in Dublin City Centre. A big shout out to my special guest this evening. Great to take your time out for us, Andrew Mangan of Arsecast. How are you, pal?
I'm very well, thanks. It's good to be on with Johnny Giles. At last.
Andrew! Evening, Jonathan! I went fishing there at the weekend. I caught an electric eel. It was a bit of a shock. How are we doing? How are we getting on all right?
We're good. Yes. Surviving the international break, I think.
Yeah, as you refer to it, the interlude. That's a great word, you know.
That's it.
Do you know what? I watched Scotland last night, and it was like watching Arsenal. I don't mean about Scotland, but the co-commentators, they had the same gallows humour as we have when we're watching Arsenal.
Right.
Oh, my God, how do we make this so difficult, you know? But that was the only enjoyment I got out of it. It's shocking stuff. But look, it happened at a good time for us, I think, you know?
Yeah, I think so. You know, we've had a decent start to the season, I think, you know? Yeah. So all things considered, it's, you know, there's ups and downs, a bit of injury news, which isn't great. But, you know, so far, touch wood, everybody appears to have come through without any problems. So let's hope the last few games now, I think tonight and tomorrow, maybe some games on Wednesday as well. And we get everybody back and get ready to go again, because it's going to get busy, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, 100%. I'm also joined by, as you heard, Eamon Donnelly. Great to have you on as well, pal. Before we kick into the questions for you, Andrew, Jack Wilshere appointed Luton town manager. What do you think about that one?
That's really interesting, isn't it? You know, it's something he's wanted to move into. I think he's wanted to try his luck as a senior manager. There was talk of him coming back to work with the under-21s. They couldn't quite work that out, but you know, he's clearly very committed to making a career as a coach, as a manager. So we'll wait and see. I think I think there's an impression sometimes with Jack, you know, that he's not quite as bright as he is. You know, I think sometimes he's sort of put in a box where they think, oh, he's just like a typical, you know, sort of ex-footballer. But it's not that I ever watch TalkSport, but I remember seeing some clips of him on TalkSport with some of the guys that are on there, and he's more than capable of holding his own with them. So I think the personality is certainly there, and it'll be very, very interesting to see what kind of a job he does. They're, I think, 11th now in League One, so mid-table. You know, there's room for improvement there, considering they were in the Premier League a couple of seasons ago. So a couple of successive relegations, they're not in great shape. So it might just be the right kind of job for him to cut his teeth in, and hopefully he can do a good job there. I think he's brought in Chris Powell as his assistant, you know, very experienced guy from Charlton. I think that's a smart move, you know, just have an experienced guy behind him. It would be great, wouldn't it, you know, to see him go on and make a good career as a coach, as a manager, because, you know, as a player, he didn't really fulfill his potential because of all the injuries. So if he can sort of do it, you know, on the other side, that'd be great for him.
Andrew, can I just make one comment on that? I always said about Jack as a player, looking at him, everybody kind of compared him to Liam, because he had that drop of the hip, drop of the shoulder. But I always felt that he just took the ball just that split second too late into contact. And that ended up getting his ankles banged too many times for my liking. He just didn't really, there's a very, very fine line between releasing it and not getting done, and I just felt that he just didn't have the timing quite right on that. But he was a terrific player, Jack,
I think as well that there's, once you sort of get to senior level, there are probably players who will deliberately do you in a way that they wouldn't do you at youth level. As a youth player, you're not going to go in, but once you get to senior football, there's no quarter given, and it only takes two or three guys in your entire career to give you a big problem with your ankle. He picked one up very early, didn't he? And I'm not sure he ever really, really recovered from that. So yeah, I think there is some truth to that, but as well, the skillful players getting taken out is just the way football has always been. Ask Diego Maradona or Lionel Messi. Look at their ankles. Some players are just a bit more robust.
When he scored that goal of the season against Norwich City all those years back, I think it was just around 2012 season. It was just an incredible goal he scored. What a talent he was. But sadly, that injury course struck him. As we ask, I'll ask all our guests when they first come on, Andrew, what got you into supporting the Arsenal?
I mean, I think I've told the story before, but I was born in England, so I was born in England to both my parents from Dublin, from Drimna. But we lived over there, and we lived over there in the full knowledge that we were Irish, me and my brother. We were brought up by Irish parents to, be Irish. And in the 70s, as and I'm sure everybody watching this knows, there was a huge Irish connection at Arsenal in the 70s. The players, like Liam, David O'Leary, Frank Stapleton, but you had Pat Rice and Pat Jennings, Sammy Nelson, John Devine. All of these players were there at a time when I was, just learning to love football and getting into football. So I don't ever remember making a conscious decision, I'm going to support Arsenal. But Liam Brady was sort of like my first football hero, I guess. And I think it was just that Irish connection, living in England till I was about 10. But by the time I was 7 or 8 or whatever it was, I was definitely an Arsenal fan. I think it was just that Irish connection, all of those Irish players who were at Arsenal, whether they were from the Republic of Ireland or Northern Ireland, didn't make any difference to me. I didn't really know the difference because I was so young anyway. It was just a question of like, Irish, I like that. So I think that's what it was,
Who are your favourite Irish players to have played for the Arsenal? Who sticks out the most for you?
You know what I mean? As I said, Liam Brady was a big hero, but I was too young really to appreciate Liam Brady and to see Liam Brady. He left in what, 1980, and I was 9 years of age in 1980 when he left. So I suppose the one that really sticks with me the most is David O'Leary. He was there for a long time. He's the record appearance holder at Arsenal. He's a centre half. I played centre half my whole life. So I always connected with Dave O'Leary in that way. I think he's the one. I remember feeling at times like, oh, does he really get on with George Graham? Is he sort of cast aside a little bit? And there was a bit going on, wasn't there, at the time with Jack Charlton and the Irish team and the way he was treated by Jack, and it didn't always feel fair. But he played such a big role in doing what we did under George, and that record appearance is probably, well, maybe Bukayo Saka might get there sooner rather than later. You never know. But it's such an incredible achievement, isn't it? For an
Hold on,
Irishman, yeah.
as I say, at the end of the day, Bukayo Saka will not beat my record. I said to Bukayo, get on with it. But do you remember, Andrew, if you move back to Ireland, in the Sunday War, after Liam had left, I was called Chippy in school because I was so obsessed with Liam, because I was born in 65, so I'm a few years old. Frank Stapleton then left, And Dave was then the one of that triumvirate. I know John Devine played with us as well. But he had a column in the Sunday World called Gunner's Gossip, right? And
No
like,
way.
yeah, I mean, for working class families in Finglas, where I'm from, the Sunday World was actually considered to be an organ that you could actually read. And you know, I've since my reviewed my kind of media ratings, but we bought it because my dad said Eamon wants to read Gunner's Gossip. So every Sunday in the Sunday World for a good 15 years, David would give you yesterday we played, wasn't pleased with it and all that, you know. It was great stuff, you
That's
know.
mad. I mean, that's a completely, alien thing now. You would never get a player doing that for any organization or newspaper or anything like that. So that's amazing, isn't it? You have to have that.
Another
Someone must
gossip
have just,
thing, you
someone just
know.
rang him up and they just transcribe it and put it in the paper. Brilliant. Love that.
Yeah, David,
Sorry,
I mean,
I'm in the King's Head and Blackstock Road.
Yeah, exactly. The Bank of Friendship.
Record appearance holder, though, still David O'Leary. It's quite an achievement, isn't it? Like, consider what was it, 1993, I think he left the Gunners. It's just incredible to still withstanding, yeah. Next summer, of course, will be 20 years since we left the famous old ground, Highbury, which is incredible. What were your memories of Highbury, Andrew? Did you see many matches at the old famous ground?
Yeah, a few, like not as many as I would have liked, but certainly a few, and it's just my sort of recollection of it is always being cold. There, I never got to too many games in the summer. It always seemed to be like winter games, and the atmosphere around the ground, and just sort of walking in and seeing the pitch, and it was it was an amazing place. And I think that's one of the things that's so great about English football, is this the positioning of clubs in the neighborhoods, and we have it here, to a certain extent. Around Dublin, some of the grounds around Dublin are like that, where you just sort of turn a corner and whoa, there's a football ground. Like they're not Highbury or they're not Goodison Park or they're not Anfield, but they're still sort of that's the deal. And I think, even when you go by now, you can sort of sense the history of the place and you can sense, just how rooted it is in the community. And I think it's quite interesting. I'm sure you saw some of the stories about the stadium expansion and that kind of stuff. And I remember at the time before they decided on Ashburton Grove as the site for the new stadium, there was talk about Wembley. There was talk about King's Cross. There was talk about maybe going further out, wasn't there? Maybe
Definitely.
towards Hertfordshire to the home counties. And I think probably the greatest thing that the club managed to do with the new stadium is keep it just so close and
Unbelievable.
so part of the community,
Unbelievable.
and I think we're separate, right? We're disparate from the North London community, but every time you go, you realize just how integral it is to life there. You walk up and down Holloway Road, it doesn't matter if it's a match day or not. You walk up and down Holloway Road and all you're seeing is, Arsenal shirts. So it's brilliant that they managed to sort of maintain that presence within the local community,
It's quite an incredible, the new ground, the Emirates. But yourself, Eamon, you were at many a game at Highbury. How special was that ground to yourself, Eamon?
Yeah, I tried to do the calculation because at this stage in my life, just for Andrew's benefit, I'd be pretty much at every home game now, but back when we were playing at Highbury, went to my first game in 79, just before the cup final, the last home game before the cup final. But I think I only went to 30 games there, and a lot of them would have been coming towards the end of the Wenger era when you could actually get tickets and stuff. I'm not so sure it was as great as, I'll put it to you this way. When we beat Man United in the 1988 Cup, FA Cup fourth or fifth round, and Brian McClair, toss pot that he is, put that ball into the air. I nearly caught the ball. I was standing on the north bank that day. There was 54,000 people in the ground that day, and the atmosphere was rocking. But I think the atmosphere in the Emirates now is as good as I've seen at Arsenal games at any stage in my life. Really, isn't it? You know? Yeah.
I think what it is, though, you know, Highbury just had the history, you know, and there is something to a place where it has all those years of history, failure and success, you know. And I think that's, you know, for me, that's kind of what the Emirates is missing now is that big one, you know, the title where, you know, whether we celebrate it on the final day of the season or whether you celebrate it with a few weeks to go, hopefully, if we can do that this season, that'd make all our lives lovely, wouldn't it? But you know, that idea that
Jordy Finnbarr, get that man off air now. We're not allowed to predict
I'm not predicting anything, I'm just hoping.
that.
But what I mean is, like, imagine the first day of the new season at home. I think it.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
It would be something a little bit special because, you know, for everybody who supports and loves Arsenal, the time without the title is sort of a cross around the neck a little bit, isn't it? You know, we need to get rid of that at this point. And I think, you know, it would just sort of bring something, I don't know, like it would help fully transition from Highbury to the Emirates if we could win the title and celebrate that there, you know.
Yeah, it would be something special. The Man City game I was with aiming there last month when Gabriel Martinelli got that late equal. The ground just erupted, you know, and the atmosphere now, you know, as Amos, it's just electric. You know, the last 2 or 3 years, it's just become a home now. You know, you can feel that, you know, the support, the Arse Sporting boys and the concourse beforehand with the
Jonathan,
songs and.
I think COVID changed everything because,
Yeah, that's a fair point.
I think people took going to the Arsenal for granted. And for all people give out about the late Wenger years, he won 3 FA Cups, right? In those late years, right? Treated us to some great football, was battling against the odds financially, the whole lot, right? And we were a bit brittle. We knew all that, but I still think that people came along and took going to the Arsenal for granted. All of a sudden, after COVID, I remember the first game that I went to after COVID was a Friday night game against Aston Villa when crowds were allowed back in again. And I just went, Jesus Christ, this is different. Right. First of all, the profile of the supporter had changed. There were a lot of much more younger people there. And I just think that people have, you know, COVID will be with us in our human memory for, you know, the next 20, 30, 40 years. And I think people say, I'm never going to take that for granted again. Which probably won't. And if I ask myself, the truth is, I probably used to go to 10 games a season. Now I go to 20 games a season, probably for that reason, you know?
Yeah, you have gone to a lot more games than I am. Andrew, how remarkable of an achievement was the 03-04 invincible winning season in your opinion? Just quite superb, wasn't it? Like when you see the unbeaten record still there.
Yeah, I mean, it's something we celebrate every season, isn't it? You know, where, you know, whoever's the last team to lose a game, you're sort of going, come on now, it's time, it's time, it's time, you need to lose a game. I mean, it is, it's amazing. I, you know, the more I think about it, or the more time passes, I think what's most remarkable, or something maybe we take a little bit for granted, is the fact that they won the league with like four games to go.
Yeah.
And that's job done. That's job done is like you've won the league. What more is there? And I think psychologically, to be able to push through those four games that we played towards the end of the season, I think there was one against Fulham, one
Yeah.
against Portsmouth.
Portsmouth, yeah.
And I think they score first, Portsmouth and Reyes, Jose Antonio Reyes maybe scored a
That's
goal.
right, yeah, spot on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then
And
Leicester at the end of the season, they went behind
Leicester.
as well, you know?
Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
that's
You
right,
know,
yeah.
but I think that sort of extra effort, having won the title and feeling like you've accomplished what you set out to accomplish, as well as, by the way, I think, you know, there was a profound disappointment that season when it came to the Champions League, that those guys, I do wonder maybe if we continued in the Champions League, if the unbeaten thing wouldn't have happened,
Yeah.
because they would have been really, really focused on that. Instead, they didn't have that, and I think that really hurt. And the way it happened hurt. You know, I don't want to scratch all wounds, but we don't need to talk about that game against Chelsea, you know. But I think probably, you know, if they were looking for some motivation to really focus on those four games, which didn't really matter in the grand scheme of things, it was probably the Champions League exit that did that, you know. It's a hard thing to pick yourself up when you've won the thing, you know.
Andrew, I was wearing a 24-hour blood pressure monitor at that
Yeah, I can
Chelsea game.
understand that. I can understand that.
And still does to this day.
Well, yeah, better safe than sorry, though, right?
Yeah, better safe. Yeah. But when Arsenal went out
The doctor actually said to me when I went to get the results, he said, he acted the first time, the only time I had my GP course, he said, Eamon, what the fuck were you doing between 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock that night? I said, I was watching the Champions League. He said, that's okay. That's
That's
all
all
right.
right. Nothing more
Yeah.
vigorous than that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, when the Arsenal went out in that invincible season, though, lads, you just knew we were going to win. You know, there was that predictability that, yeah, we're going to win. You know, we're going to beat these, you know, and
But Jonathan, can I say something about that, right? Because you see, back in those days, you're talking 20 years ago, just over 20 years ago. People used to accept that things can go wrong. And it wasn't the case where it is now, where it is when something good happens, it's the greatest thing in the world. And when something bad happens, it's meltdown. And those extremes that we have to, like Twitter and all, I ignore all that stuff. But at the time, I can remember we played Charlton away that season and we went one down. And Thierry got a free kick and it was a one-all
I remember
draw.
that match, yeah.
And we were battered off the pitch that day. So it wasn't as if the Invincibles turned up every week and had it
Yeah.
all their own way and were exquisite. They had to battle hard. And
Yeah.
so, you know, and on the season's either side of that, remember the year before we had the league in the bag, Andrew,
I
the
do.
0-2, 0-3, and we blew
Yeah.
it. That was the same team as the Invincibles, you know. So just
Yeah, I remember yet that Bolton Wanderers game away. I'll just never
Yeah,
forget
well,
them.
no, that was like the Vietnam War. I mean, you know,
A man of
was
many
a
words.
battle, all right. It
Yeah.
was a battle.
The big question now to you, Andrew. Arteta is coming to 6 years in charge now in a couple of months' time of the Gunners. What have you made of his reign to date, Andrew?
I mean, we're a really, really, really good team. And we were not a really, really good team when he took over.
Yeah.
We were bad. We were bad. You know, we bought badly. We played badly. Always remember that game. Remember, we played Man City about 2 or 3 weeks before he took over. Everyone knew he was coming, but we played Man City maybe even a week or two before.
Right, yeah.
And they didn't get out of first gear and they won that game 3-0. And I can remember Arteta sitting there looking around, looking at the players, looking at the pitch, looking at the crowd, and thinking, I'm sure he was thinking, like, holy cow, I've got a big job in my hands here. And I think what he has done in that time has been unbelievable for a guy who is in his first job. To build the team that he has built, to build the squad that he's built, to raise the expectations. Like, you have to ask yourself, if your expectations are not being met because you finished second, Does that not mean we have very lofty expectations? And why do we have lofty expectations? Because the manager has done a great job with this team. And last season, we didn't do what we should have done in the Premier League. Got to the semi-final of the Champions League, though, which nobody was expecting. You look at the bench, starting Mikel Merino starting up front against Real Madrid, and we're playing them off the park. Come on. So I think, he's not perfect. He makes mistakes. Every manager makes mistakes, but I think he's done a brilliant, brilliant job. A brilliant job. I could, like, you don't have to go back too far to remember when Arsenal were just crap. Mid-table rubbish. Football was rubbish. We were carried through sometime because we had a player like Aubameyang, and who's brilliant, who won us the FA Cup. And, I think Arteta, obviously deserves credit for that because he put out a team to play in a way that's not his way, but he put out a team that suited the players that he had. This is why I think the comparisons with Amorim at Man United are quite funny. Arteta didn't play his system until he had the players he knew could play it. And in the meantime, his job was to get results. And that meant putting the players out in a different way. I think he's been great. I think he really has been great. I don't think any manager is beyond scrutiny or criticism, and he's certainly not. But like I said, you have to ask yourself, why are people unhappy at finishing second? If that's unacceptable, it's because the level has been raised to a really, really, high point, and ultimately he's the guy who's responsible for that.
That's a really great point, and I was just thinking about before the show, Jonathan and Andrew. Like last season, we all know Howard Fawcett-Sercas Webb contrived against us with some mad decisions, and we got some a run of injuries that were just bizarre. I mean, they were unorthodox, right? And we still did what we did. But I noticed something this season different from last season, and it's probably down to squad depth. So if you take before we got absolutely butchered with injuries, the biggest failing last season, in my view, it was actually one of the few home games I wasn't at. It was coming up to Christmas. We played Everton in a nil-nil draw, and we couldn't really find a way through them. Well, let me tell you something. I wasn't at the West Ham game. I've just had eye surgery. But the West Ham game I watched in the Dublin Arsenal Supporters Club, and I actually watched it back in full on arsenal.com because I like watching things to see what I can see. And what I noticed was we didn't just try to play side to side, side to side, side to side. We did something different. This is a different Arsenal this season. So, for example, Calafiori was like a balloon with the air suddenly let out. He went all over the place. Gyökeres actually ran into spaces down the left-hand side of their box, occupied two defenders. Saka, when he saw that, hugged the touchline, created a big elastic space for Timber to run into, and we pitched the ball in with a pitching wedge from time to time. That's different. That's different than what we were doing. And you know what that tells me? There's a manager, and not only a manager and coaching staff who are serious about what they do, very, very serious. And as well as that, where else would you get it? I was looking at the start of that game on playback, and I saw Albert sitting down on the bench just before he was actually singing the words of North London Forever. I mean, but what does that tell you about togetherness? I think Gabriel Heinze coming in has made us a much more mean organization. You always have to say to yourself when a player you think is an asshole when he's playing for the opposition, if he's really good, that means because he's really good. Like, I mean, you could look at Robbie Savage saying, we hated him, but he was crap, so it didn't matter. But we hated Heinze and Vidic because they were actually bloody good, So having him on the coaching staff, I think, is a big boon, you know?
It's certainly a change in personality, isn't it? It's a very, I mean, I think you're right about that sort of togetherness, and he's done a lot of work, to create that and to foster that. But Heinze is certainly a character who's a bit more combustible, let's say, than Carlos Cuesta, who, seemed a really cool guy, nice guy, quite young, same age bracket as a lot of the players. But Heinze is, potentially a complete lunatic. So how that works on the training ground, we'll have to wait and see. And what it gets from these players, I don't know. But, so far, so good.
Yeah, the key
Well,
word
all
there.
I can say, Jonathan, sorry, do one more comment.
Yeah,
Like,
sorry, yeah.
I look at Gabriel, and he looks like irreplaceable to us at this point, right? But 3 years ago, there was a mistake in him in every game. That's down to good coaching.
Coach,
Sure. Yeah. And maturing, maturing as a player. He's 26 now. I think I mean, he's one of the best in the world, which is testament to the way he's developed since he joined.
Yeah, you can see huge improvements, can't you? Of the transfer window, Andrew, it was a really good transfer window when you look at the age profile, so young, and one for the future, you can see. Who's impressed you of all the summer transfer windows to date, Andrew?
Well, it's early days, but I've enjoyed watching Mosquera since he arrived. I think the fact that Mikel Arteta is prepared to use him rather than William Saliba, to sort of rest Saliba and give him a chance, tells you a lot about the quality. I love the signing of Eze because I think it's one we needed. We needed a bit more craft, a bit more creativity, a bit more. He's 26, 27, 27 now. He's been there, done that. And he's just got danger about him. The one I think is really important and really pivotal is Zubimendi. I think he brings something different to the base of midfield. I think we're starting to see the influence he can have. He came off the bench against West Ham. He was involved in both the goals. Played the ball forward for the penalty that Timber won. Played the ball to Eze, which was the shot that Rice then played. I think he's great on the ball. Defensively, I think he's a step up on what we had there previously. And it's 7 games into the new season, and I'm excited about what more is to come from him. I know that there's other players. Forwards always get a bit more attention, don't they? So everybody's focused on Gyökeres and what he can do and what he might bring to the team. But I do feel like from when you look at how a team might develop, putting somebody different at the base of midfield and allowing them to influence how we attack and how we set up in attack, I think was going to be the most important part of how this team develops. Yes, we've got a new striker. We've needed that, no question. But Zubimendi for me is the guy that I'm really been impressed. I've really been impressed by, I have to say.
There's one signing myself and Eamon I've really enjoyed watching today's, Andrew, Nani Madueke from Chelsea. You really like this lad, Eamon, don't you? He kind of got a bit.
Well, I was at the Forest game, and he's different than Bukayo Saka. He plays in a different way. And I always say about Bukayo Saka, they used to say about George Best that when he got the ball, the stadium went quiet because everybody just kind of hold their breath to see what happened next. Bukayo Saka is a bit like that. Madueke is a different thing. Madueke is a fizz bomb, But I was really, 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 really impressed with him. I stand about 10, 12 rows back on the clock end. So you get a really good view of that kind of wing play. I'm just to one side of the goal. And I think he's going to be, I said he was going to be a really good signing for us. And I think he will be. I think you're going to see Saka. He got a goal from the left-hand side. I'm just saying there's different things that can happen with Saka. I think you'll see Saka going down through the middle, going to the left. I just think that Saka will not be copyright right-hand side when Madueke's fit,
Yeah, when players get fans up off their seats, you have a special talent there, isn't it? And that's, I know, you have a question, sir, aiming for Andrew since he's on about Eden and Wardy.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I just wonder. I look at Ethan Manieri and I think there's a brilliant player in there, and I think his ability when they brought him on when Martin got injured against, I think it was Forrest again,
Yeah, Forrest and Leeds again.
because he wasn't stuck out on the right hand side, he was receiving the ball, was back to goal in a more central position, and his ability to swivel off either side and create space and understanding his wing mirrors what was happening, I was really impressed with that, and he ran that game when he came on. And I am slightly worried about his lack of minutes. And I haven't made up my mind yet because he's only a kid. I just hope he's not sulky because I look at Emil Smith Rowe and I think, what a great waste of talent. That guy had everything, but his head just wasn't right. And I'm just wondering, what future pathway do you see for Ethan?
I mean, I think, we have to recognize that he is only 18 and Lewis Skelly's only 18, and to be where they are in a team this good is a real testament to their talent and quality. Like you, I'm a little bit not worried, I would say, but I've taken note of the lack of minutes. I thought it was interesting against West Ham that when Martin Odegaard got injured, he put Zubimendi on rather than Ethan, which he did against Forest and against Leeds. I don't think you can argue that that was the wrong decision, though, based on the way Zubimendi came in and really influenced that game. I think it's just one of those things where, the opportunities might be a little bit limited at first, and I think there is still some learning to do at 18 years of age. Odegaard is hugely experienced, had so much more, or has so much more sort of experience than Wanyama, and he's asked to do a very specific job in that midfield role. It's not just about being a creator; it's about organizing and leading the press. And I think when he's not there, I don't think you can ask Wanyama to do that. I think you've got to delegate that role to somebody else. But I'm excited by what he can become because I think there's a really, really talented player in there. And actually, when you think about players who can get into positions around the opposition box and hit the ball, there are few in our squad who can do it as well as he can, So
And he can also buy himself the space to hit the ball, which is
that's
really
it,
important.
That's it, And I think there is something a little bit different from playing out on the wing and then playing in central areas. There's a lot to learn. Wenger did it all the time. Wenger played Cesc Fabregas on the right wing, not because he was a right winger, but because he needed him to understand the pitch. And I think we're seeing a bit of that with Wanyama so far this season. I'm looking at maybe games like Slavia Prague, the EFL Cup game, one or two of those games where hopefully, if he starts, he can make a real impact and then just give the manager something to think about.
Yeah, I have to say, Andrew, it's been a real pleasure having you on the show this evening. To have yourself on.
I had one last question for Andrew,
Go ahead,
and this
Eamon.
is related to your column, which I read every morning, right? Which would be the worst torture for 1 hour, Maroon 5 or Phil Collins?
Phil Collins. I got to stick with the classics. Got to stick with the
That's bang on, Andrew. I can't disagree with you there. I'd like to thank Andrew
classics.
Mannigan from Arscast for coming on this evening. Andrew, thanks very much.
Pleasure, guys. Thank you for having me.
And to our in-house gooner, Eamon Donnelly, catch our show on Spotify and the Dublin Arsenal YouTube channel. But until the next time, come on, you gooners. Thank you.
See you later.